imagine taking your generosity to the next level, impacting more lives and leaving a godly legacy for generations to come. Get ideas and strategies to do just that when you listen to these personal stories from high-level kingdom champions. The Kingdom Investor Podcast showcases business leaders who have moved from success to significance, sharing how they use worldly wealth for kingdom impact. Discover how they grew in generosity, impacted more lives, and built godly legacies. You'll find motivation, inspiration, and practical steps to grow as a kingdom investor.
Hello, and welcome to the Kingdom Investor Podcast. This is your host, Daniel White. Thanks for joining us as we hear from Jim Wise. Jim is the senior partner at Ronald Blue Trust and senior private wealth advisor. Jim has served the financial industry for almost 40 years and has a wealth of knowledge around biblical stewardship. Jim shares his personal transformation story, new purpose for work, and how we can fund the completion of the Great Commission. For your listening convenience, we broke this conversation into three episodes. Thanks, guys, for listening and sharing this podcast with your friends. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn at The Kingdom Investor Podcast. And without further ado, let's jump right into the show. What happened next? Can you share more of these stories? This is really powerful.
Well, my job became an issue at that point in a couple of ways. And it had actually started at the same time. My job as a financial advisor back then was with a secular firm and in a commission-only environment. So all of the training was based on just how to sell. Whether clients bought something or sold something, firm got paid, advisor got paid. And I had built a practice that actually maximized income, personal income, and income for the firm. So I had a lot of clients that were trading penny stocks and trading stock options, and people that's their investment strategy never make money. They always, even if they have a few winners, they always lose it back. It's more like gambling for most investors. So as God was changing my heart and understanding his ownership and that I'm a steward of his resources, to me, that wasn't just my and Lori's resources. That extended to the clients that he has entrusted to me, because suddenly I realized every relationship I have has been entrusted to me by God for his purposes. And I thought, you know, I call it professional guilt. It was the first time in my life I had ever experienced professional guilt, because I thought, I have actually been perpetuating the lie with clients, just reinforcing the American way of thinking that it's all about endless, mindless accumulation of wealth. More risk you take, the more likely you are to hit the home run. So all of a sudden, alongside of the tithing and getting rid of debt, my income started going down because I couldn't do it anymore. So I actually went back to all of those clients and just actually invested them in a healthy way and stopped doing things that were generating maximum commissions. So income started to decline, but I wanted to start incorporating my faith and biblical wisdom into my practice. And at that point, I felt like I completely had a biblical grasp of stewardship. And I had read one of Ron Blue's books and Larry Burkett's stuff. So I really felt like the application of it, I was able to do that. What I didn't anticipate was that my firm may not want me to do that. And so I learned two lessons pretty quickly. The first was one of the first new prospective new clients that came was referred to me during this season, came in with a large amount of money that they wanted to invest, and they had been referred to me as the advisor to invest it with. And they came into the office to meet me for the first time, and they had already decided they were going to go with me. There was no selling needed. It was just a decision as to how we were going to invest the money. By the time they left the meeting, they had agreed not to hire me, not to invest it at all, but to use that money to pay off all their debt and then fund an emergency fund and then start accumulating for investment, basically do it in the biblical order. they were thrilled. It was so funny to see how happy they were at the thought of being completely debt-free. It never would have occurred to them to use the money for that purpose. My boss was not at all happy that I had a great prospect and I blew it. I didn't close them and I didn't get the money, and that I was actually the one who talked them out of it. It's not like I was in a competitive situation and they had three firms they were talking to and they just picked a different one. They had picked us and they had picked me and I had talked them out of it. So at that point, I realized, oh my goodness, I might have some difficulty actually inculcating biblical wisdom into my practice. I had never thought about doing that in a secular environment. And then right after that, the general manager of the Christian radio station in the city where I lived and practiced, he was introduced to me somehow, or introduced to, heard about our testimony, our story, that I was a Christian now and kind of developing this expertise in biblical stewardship. So he contacted me and said, I'd like to interview you on the radio. And I was thrilled to be able to share all this stuff that God had been pouring into me. So I agreed to do it. And a week before the interview, I had to let our compliance department know what I was doing, because I was going on the radio and technically represent the firm. So they said, you need to get in writing every question that you're going to be asked, and you need to write out the answers that you're going to give. And then you need to submit it to the compliance department to get approval to go on the radio and have this discussion. And it was a lot of work because there were a lot of questions, and I wrote it all out and I sent it in. And right before the interview, they finally sent it back, and there was not a single question left intact. And there was not any of my answers were remotely left intact. And basically what they came back with was not just a completely marked up, you can't do this script, but it was very clear, you cannot mention Jesus Christ, you cannot mention church, you cannot mention your faith or anything to do with it. You represent us, you can't go on the radio. So I basically gave it to the general manager and said, here's what they sent back, what do you think? And he's saying, Jim, I don't even know what we're going to do, because they trashed the whole point of you coming on is to talk about biblical stewardship principles. So I said, well, here's what we'll do. Just don't tell anybody who I work for, because if I come on the radio representing my employer, then I am bound. It would want to be bound by whatever rules they impose. So let's just go with Jim's a friend of mine who's a financial advisor who's developed some expertise in biblical stewardship, and just interview me as an individual. And then we don't have to deal with the compliance issues. But I realized between those two incidents, I realized I need to practice in a way that is very overt. And I, at that point, could not ever have given advice that didn't align with God's word and God's wisdom. So that started the journey that led me to conclude that I really needed to leave. I didn't know if I was leaving the industry or if I was just leaving the secular side of the industry, but God had started to lay an incredibly strong burden on my heart that I had to leave. And it was so overwhelming, and I had no idea what I would do or where I would go. I still remember the day of surrender, because that weight on me, almost like Abraham, not to over-spiritualize or over-dramatize, but very much, you need to go to the place where I'm sending you. And I was, again, in my desk, in my office, in my house, and it was a Saturday morning right after my quiet time, and I couldn't shake it. I couldn't shake that I was supposed to leave my current employment. And I remember that's another time where I'm just, I have tears streaming down my face. And I remember I said to the Lord, okay, it was surrender, right? I get it. You want me to leave. I absolutely will leave, and I'll go wherever you send me. I want you to remember, nobody's going to pay me what they're paying me, and I could really use the income, because we still have bills. We haven't paid off our debt yet, but I will go. But this is so stupid. I'm quoting scripture back to God, but I'm telling him, your word says, if a man doesn't provide for his relatives and particularly his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So in the leaving, I understand I have a responsibility to work and provide for the needs of my family. So as soon as you show me where to go to work, I'll resign and go to the next place. And very quickly after that point of surrender, a few things happen. I walk into a Christian bookstore and they were featuring a book by Ron Blue called Master Your Money. So the finance section of this Christian bookstore had it turned face out with Ron's picture, and the whole thing was loaded with Master Your Money. And I thought, what an incredible thing to get a book that talks about the application of biblical principles. So I bought the book and I just flew through it. It was so wonderful and life-giving and affirming. And Ron talked not just about the biblical truth, but the practical application. And as he went through it, it became clear he actually does this for a living. He has a company that has financial advisors, and they actually give biblical financial advice. It was crazy, the thought that you could actually do that for a living. And then right after I had finished the book, I'm in church on Sunday. And honestly, a guy walks up to me that I didn't know. And he said, "Hey, Jim, are you a financial advisor? I heard you're a financial advisor." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Have you ever heard of Ron Blue?" I said, "That's so funny you would ask. I just finished reading his book, Master Your Money." And he goes, "Yeah, there was a guy from Ron Blue up here that did a workshop or something a couple years ago. And you're a financial advisor." And I was just thinking, "You, Ron Blue?" And he walked away mumbling. He never made a point. I didn't even know why he came up to me except to mention Ron Blue and ask if I knew him. And then he walked away. And this again is a brand new Christian. Like, you're in the first year, year and a half of your walk, stuff like that happens. It just seems really strange, really bizarre. And then a couple of months later, we had a men's retreat at church, and my mentor, who had been our mentor couple, they had been praying with us, for us, and walking us through. They knew that we were starting to wrestle with a career transition, had a strong sense that God was calling me away. And they intentionally didn't give us advice on what to do. They wanted to wait and just see how God was leading. But they had been praying regularly for us as well. And when we sat down together, me and Don had lunch at the men's retreat. And he said, "Look, you know, we've been praying for you for months." He said, "Are you, I know you've read Ron Blue's book. Do you know he has a firm?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, we've been clients for many years, and they just decided to open an office in the Northeast. They didn't have an office anywhere near Baltimore where I lived. And they had just decided to open an office within 90 minutes of where I lived." And he said, "We've been praying for you and praying for you. And we just keep feeling like God is telling us that's where you're supposed to be." So three times, that was enough for me. Three Ron Blue things in a very short period of time. Monday morning, I called the national office, and the poor receptionist who answered the phone, I just said, "Hi, my name's Jim Wise. I live up in Baltimore, and God is calling me to work there. So I just need to know what I'm supposed to do or who I need to talk to." And she just started laughing because I thought this was going to be a really weird call for her. And she said, "Mr. Wise, we get these all the time from all over the country. That's how we've been building out the folks that work here. God just sends them." So that started basically a one-year process to get through the screening at Ron Blue. But then just a couple of years into my walk, I resigned and then was able to come and start working here.
Wow, that's fantastic. Just one story after another of how God has worked through different circumstances and brought you to where you are now. So can you share maybe a little bit about what you're doing now?
So I think I'd mentioned that my role at Ron Blue, I have a dual role. So for most of my career, the dual role was I serve clients. So actually getting to implement the biblical wisdom with families. I've done that for my entire career, and most of my career here, I've also been in management. So I've managed several branch offices, and that always took about 30%, maybe 40% of my time. But as part of my ministry, I've been very intentionally focused on the mission of Ron Blue, which is to help Christians become financially free in order to fund the Great Commission. So our focus as a firm, our mission has never changed since the doors opened in 1979. It's all about the Great Commission. God didn't need to raise up another excellent financial planning firm. There are a ton of them out there. But what was needed was a financial planning firm that only brought biblical wisdom to bear to kind of counteract the worldview of what faithful financial management looked like. Because before that time, God's people didn't really have a choice except to work with a secular organization. So the firm was started to see resources freed up through stewardship and generosity to complete the work of the Great Commission. And that all of us who feel called here, that's why we came, that's why we stay, that's why they'll have to drag us out. We will not go anywhere. Because you don't have to read all the way through the Bible to realize that's a pretty high priority for the Lord. It's a command for all of his people. So that is still 60 to 70% of my time. But I realized a long time ago that there was always going to be a limit to the number of families and individuals that I'm personally able to serve in this way. And so the first way to be able to kind of expand impact is our discipleship model of we bring in, disciple the next generation, and then help them kind of get started. But I still, this goes back to like 2002, I was doing strategic planning, and I just had that same type of burden or that holy discontent that I didn't want to get to the end of my career and stand before Jesus with all that I felt like he had entrusted to me in terms of biblical wisdom as applied to finance, but also just the personal things he had done in my life that I wanted to be able to share with other people and help other people. So during that week of strategic planning that I was going through just by myself and prayerfully thinking through, Lord, is there a direction career-wise? I came to the conclusion that there were two other areas that I could focus time and attention that would have exponential kingdom impact for the sake of the Great Commission. One channel was Christian ministries, mission-aligned ministries, because the engine that drives the work that these Great Commission-focused ministries do is the generosity of the financial partners that God has raised up to serve them. And I had noticed a trend in Christian fundraising, if you will, where so many Christian ministries have gone toward this secular sales model, transaction model. And we live with generous Christians, so they'll always tell us when ministries do things that drive them nuts. I mean, I had had clients that were giving generously to ministries and then just cut them off because of the approach they were taking to fundraising and how they interacted with the folks that were supporting them. So I realized that we've been basically called by God to disciple Christians who have above average levels of wealth and want to be more generous and want to be faithful stewards. You know, we've had decades of experience walking with these dear folks, and through them have learned all the things that ministries do that drive them crazy, and also have learned the things that ministries do that make them just want to give more, that inspire radical generosity. And so I realized if I could put together a training curriculum and start taking it to Christian ministries that are mission-focused, mission-aligned, and start training their folks who work with donors, that might have incredible impact for increasing the amount of resources that flow into the kingdom through those ministries. And then the other channel was Christian financial advisors who don't work here, because everybody who works here gets to do the same thing. But there are thousands and thousands of passionate followers of Jesus Christ that are in the financial industry, estate planning attorneys, CPAs, investment professionals, insurance professionals, bank trust officers. I mean, people that have influence in the lives of their clients with regard to finances, that are passionate followers of Jesus, that maybe haven't really gotten any training or ever considered how to incorporate biblical wisdom into the counsel they're giving to their clients, and how, for those who are working with non-Christian clients, how to use money and the role that God's given you in their lives to open the door for spiritual discussion. So that was the other conclusion I came to that same week, that if I can start devoting time to developing curriculum and training resources for Christians anywhere in the financial services space who want to start incorporating their faith into their practice, then that would likewise have the potential through donors, clients that I'll never meet until eternity, but that I could have, Lord willing, multiplied kind of exponential impact beyond whatever I'm able to do just in my own professional life. So since starting that year, I've been increasing kind of the amount of training and resources that I've developed to help in those other two channels, as well as continuing to serve here.
So can you give us maybe a little peek behind the curtain on that first question that you answered on what kind of things turn off donors, and what kind of things excite donors and just inspire generosity?
I'll start with the first one. What turns donors off is anything that feels transactional, emotionally manipulative, anything that feels like they're sitting with a non-Christian salesperson who is trying to get them to buy something, whether or not they're interested. And it probably sounds a little harsh when I say it that way, but the reality is, I mean, I've been serving ministries and ministry leaders now for, I don't even remember, but at least 20 years. Most committed Christian organizations, that model is who they are now. It started to creep in, those sales practices in the beginning. Some of those techniques probably worked, became part of the organizational DNA. And then they started, when they're recruiting for fundraising, instead of recruiting people that just love the ministry, love people, and want to disciple and shepherd the financial partners God has raised up, started hiring, in some cases, even people from the financial services industry who have a sales background. And they're the ones that are kind of leading the charge now. So, and it's tragic. And I plead with ministries when I see the transactional model, because I can tell you, as an advisor who walks with families and they start giving away money like they never even knew they could, and they're more joyful about the increased generosity even than they were about the original generosity, and then they have an experience that is so troubling that they cut off the ministry completely. And I, if you don't mind my sharing the first time, because this is what led me to build out a curriculum specifically for Christian ministries. One of my clients, they owned a business, but it was a very small business. And he needed to work in it full time to be able to provide for their family, but they had six kids. They were very committed to the Christian school that was a part of their church. So they were giving away 20% of their income. And they were not making a ton of income, but they were incredibly generous. And it was just, they were a delight to be around because they were so focused on biblical stewardship and generosity. And no matter what came up that they needed or wanted to do, they would not cut into the giving. Whatever they did, they would not go below the 20% giving level. So they had been a client for years and finally made a decision to sell the business and start glide pathing into retirement. And again, it was a small business, so it wasn't millions of dollars. But when I met with them and we're making the final decision and starting to talk through what they should ask for it and that kind of thing, they were not viewing it like, all this will be great, we can retire, we have a windfall. The only thing they were excited about is now we're going to have money to give away, because they had ministries they wanted to give to, but they couldn't give to any other ministries without taking away from ones they were already supporting. And they didn't want to take money away from any ministry they were supporting. So they were so excited that all of a sudden there was going to be this windfall or this lump sum from which at least 20% of it, if not more, was going to be given to the kingdom. It gave them an opportunity to start looking at ministries they hadn't been able to fund. And top of their list, I obviously won't mention the ministry because we all know them, and it broke my heart. But they had been talking about this ministry for at least 2 years leading up to this time. So I knew that was going to be one of the most significant beneficiaries of when the business sold. So I was with them right. They got a buyer. I was with them right before the closing. And I'm, of course, talking about all of the financial buckets and the funding, trying to have a financial planning discussion. They couldn't even stay focused on that because they didn't care. They had carved out a big chunk of money that was going to be given away. And they were just so excited. That's all they wanted to talk about. And this one ministry they had been following for years, they carved out the biggest chunk. The gift was not only the biggest gift they will ever have made in their lives, it was a pretty good portion of what they were, the new money they were going to give away. That's how excited and convicted they were about supporting this ministry. And so the business sold. And then a few weeks later, I was with them again. And of course, is their friend and advisor and brother in Christ. I couldn't wait to hear the rest of the story. So I sit down at the table with them and I said, so I gotta know, how did it go? Like, tell me about, did you call them, talk to them? Did you visit with somebody? And they both looked at each other kind of hesitant and kind of shoulders started to slump, very serious look on both their faces. And the husband looks up and he said, Jim, we will never give another dime to that ministry. And my heart sank. Because number one, these are the perfect financial partners for any ministry. I mean, people that love Jesus, love the mission, and love to give money to fund the mission, you can't find a better financial partner than this couple. But worse, it's like their joy level, their anticipation level to get to make this gift was off the charts. And I left the meeting that day thinking to myself, how does any ministry leader go from, we are so excited that we can't wait to make the biggest gift we've ever made in our lives to this ministry, to, we will never give another dime to this ministry in 30 days? How is that even possible? So I asked, obviously, tell me about the interaction. And it made perfect sense to me when they started describing the interaction, because they said, we called the ministry. We didn't have a contact there. Told them we'd like to make a pretty significant gift. And the person who's the rep for our area called us and said, you know, thank you. We really appreciate it. I would love to get to meet you and thank you in person. How much is it that you're going to be giving? So they gave the number and he said, well, I'll be in your area in a couple of weeks, and came out and met with them. They said, when we greeted him at the front door, if he said thank you at any point, we didn't hear it. It's possible he said that, but we never heard that part. They said he sat down at the table in the chair that you're sitting in right now, and he opened his briefcase and he pulled out a bunch of brochures, didn't ask us any questions. He went into this sales presentation, didn't even talk about the gift that we had already committed. He went through all these other needs the ministry had, and then he got to the end of it and he said, now I'm going to challenge you to make a gift to this. And the gift that he challenged them to make, he actually gave them a dollar amount that was three times larger than the gift they had just committed, which was way bigger than any gift they had ever given in their life. It was so offensive. And it was so heartbreaking for them to be in a meeting with somebody who it didn't seem like he could possibly have worked for this same ministry that they had admired for, and I had admired for so many years. So that happened. And I was wrecked and spent a lot of time praying about, Lord, what do we do? Like, something has to be done about that. And just a few months later, it happened to another client. And it was the same situation. They made a three-year pledge, and every year the three-year pledge was bigger than any gift they had ever made before. And the second meeting, the second interaction they had, where the development profession almost forced his way into a meeting because they had already met with him one time. And then briefcase opened at lunch in a restaurant. Briefcase opened, brochures came out, and literally, I want to challenge you to make a gift of X. And X was a multiple of this huge gift they had already pledged. So same thing happened. They had that meeting, I think it was a Thursday or Friday, called me Monday morning because I managed their investment portfolio and said, you need to find a way to pay off our three-year pledge now, because we do not ever want to deal with that ministry again. When you're walking with people, encouraging the generosity, and they're having experience with Christian, Great Commission-focused ministries, that's the experience they're having. Nothing robs a generous Christian of their joy and generosity more quickly than dealing with a ministry or development professionals who have adopted these secular sales practices completely without regard to mission or loving or caring for the precious financial partners that God has raised up. So that's what led to me to actually develop the training curriculum. It's like a 3.5-hour workshop just for development professionals, major donor reps, ministry leaders, and board members to basically go through. We can tell you exactly what they don't want from you. And if you do any of these things, say goodbye, because they're going to leave forever. But here's what they do want you to do. And that's relationship, mission, and fruit. I mean, development professionals who understand their role as disciple makers, that reality is all of us in all of our lives, our role as disciple makers, me as a husband, me as a father, me and my community, me and whatever kind of leisure activities I'm engaged in, work, ministry, my whole life is about discipleship. But as ministry leaders come to understand that these are precious brothers and sisters in Christ that God has allowed them to enter into at some point on their generosity journey. And it's all about discipleship. It's not about what can I get from you or what even can my ministry get, but how can I encourage you in your walk with Christ in the area of stewardship and generosity? The folks that do it that way, and I'm afraid they're a dying breed. I'm hoping we're bringing revival in that space, but the folks who do that, they never have to ask for money. They share relationship. They share vision and fruit. Vision and fruit. There's not this. There has to be an ask in order for the meeting to have been worthwhile, or you have to get a yes, or you have to come back with a check, which is the transactional model. The folks that are doing it the right way, that they see increasing generosity, because as we disciple God's people who already love Jesus, they know the money belongs to him, and generosity is a high priority. And if they're already given to your ministry, that means they're aligned around the vision of the ministry as well. You don't have to try to get people to give more money away. You don't have to try to coerce or manipulate people into doing what you want them to do. The rising tide of stewardship and generosity, rising tide of us being conformed to the image of Christ, raises generosity around like all of life and all ministries. So those who see their role as a disciple maker and a privilege that God has given them to walk for whatever season with a passionate follower of Jesus who wants to be more generous, that is success. And that's where the major donors, Christians with above average levels of wealth that really have a heart for generosity, they will all end up in the ministries that see that as their role in fundraising. And they will all abandon. I mean, they're abandoning. When you look at the percentage donor retention rate among all nonprofits, Christian ministries included, it is horrifying. When you think of the work that a ministry goes to encourage someone who's never given before to get to the point where they're willing to make a gift, and then there's an 80% attrition rate after the first gift has been made, 80%. At some point, you gotta say, well, no, I guess we're just part of the statistics, but what is it about their experience that had them get to the point where they wanted to give once and then never give money again? There's gotta be something we did, or at least ask the question, is there something we did that has caused them? And if so, how can we change the way that we operate so that God keeps sending us faithful, generous Christians, and we keep turning them away because of the way we're interacting with them?
Wow, that's disheartening and encouraging at the same time. It's encouraging that you've created resources for us to learn how to do it better. So how can ministries tap into that resource? Is there a online website or?
I wish there was. I'm Mr. Anti-Technology. I'm absolutely useless with technology. So I'm not on, I don't have social media or website or anything. So ministries typically contact me directly through the Ron Blue or Ronald Blue Trust website. They can find me there. And then if they have questions or if there's anything that they need or want, a lot of the resources I've developed have been developed and tailored to specific ministries, as opposed to a general template that I can kind of make available to everybody. But if there's anything they need, and particularly like sometimes I'll get inquiries from ministry saying, I've heard about the donor discipleship training. Is there anything you can share with me? Then I can shoot them out. I did a webinar that condensed the 3.5 hours into a 90 minute. So that ministry leaders who there might not be an event, a live one happening in their city, or they want to view it now with their team. So I'll just send them out the link and they can start there and then follow up with me if they need anything else.
Okay. Yeah, that's really helpful. Is there an email address or a website that they should go to?
Yeah, the website is ronblue.com. And my email address, if anybody needs me, is jim.wise@ronblue.com.
Perfect.
So they can find me through the website if needed, or they can just shoot me an email directly.
This concludes part 2 of 3.
What if you could take your generosity to the next level, impacting more lives in your community and around the world, creating a godly legacy for generations to come? Now you can. Your first step is crafting your kingdom investing thesis. Reserve your spot in our next online workshop, where we guide you through the process of discovering your passions, create a strategic plan, and connect you to opportunities that will help you fulfill your God-given calling as a kingdom investor. Register today by clicking the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Kingdom Investor Podcast.